Welcome back to the Academic Agent Retrospective. This is Volume 12. And in this collection, we're going to be focusing on containment, which is one of the most enduring themes on the channel, but one of the least understood and indeed least popular of my concepts. Containment is when a regime, when power, contains genuine dissident energy, when it is able to harness that energy for its own ends. And I will, if you watch these videos, you'll see the many different ways that the regime is able to do that. Just before we get going, I'll remind you again that we have a tie-in. If you use the code RETRO, get £100 off any bundle that you can get on the academic agency. That's the code RETRO. And that's running all this week with the retrospective. Other than that, Jim, time to play the tape. Hello all. For the past week or so, various people have been going on about the Dave Chappelle special on Netflix. I watched it last weekend and found it funny in parts. But this video is about why this special is not the victory that so many people on our side of things seem to be claiming that it is. Imagine you are in power and you are faced with a subversive element trying to undermine that power and therefore causing you a threat. In this case, I am talking about media elites who hold power, and the subversives trying to undermine or subvert their power are right here on YouTube with no budget or corporate backing whatsoever. Now, if you are in that position, there are two classic methods of dealing with the subversive element. The first is simply to quash it using raw physical power. This is the tanks in Tiananmen Square scenario, or more recently, when the Spanish government used brute force in Catalonia. Generally, the ruling class in the West have long been cognizant of the fact that such uses of force never look good, which is why you don't tend to see Macron's police force beating up the yellow vests on television. So, there's a second strategy, which is simply this: bring the subversion in-house, thereby giving it a little ventilation valve and containing it. Probably the most recent example I can think of was the Stop the War march in London in 2003 under Tony Blair, when over a million people got to let out all their feelings, and then Mr. Blair did whatever he wanted to do anyway. This is classic containment. The threat from genuine discontent has been minimized because people have felt they've now had their say, and the real subversion is thus minimized. Now, what's all this got to do with Dave Chappelle? Well, beyond the obvious fact that the woke media outrage over the special generated more clicks for Netflix, which it can then repurpose into making more woke content itself, there is also the fact that Dave Chappelle is the start of a containment effort. And the threat from genuine discontent, which is all of us, has thereby been minimized. Now, this is not only important from the point of view of power and containment, but also from the political perspective, because however much you like the special, Dave Chappelle is one of them. He's a leftist. The epilogue on the special contains an anecdote about him talking to Kamala Harris and Barack Obama. In this country, we have a similar containment character called Jonathan Pye. He too rails against the wokeness while still supporting the establishment left and working for the BBC. Now, I don't want to be a downer, but you must be aware of this. The left only cares about power. They don't care about pissing off vapid woke journalists working for Vice magazine. They care about power, okay? They may well have realized they were losing viewers and influence over the sheer obnoxiousness of woke content over the past year or so. So now, expect to see these so-called dissenting voices, which, whether they know it or not, are designed entirely to contain
any genuine dissidents and keep you on the left. They want, I think, to go back to boiling the frog slowly. And all I see is our side behaving as their useful idiots. Don't do it. Don't fall for it. It's safer for them if it's Chappelle on Netflix and not, say, your favourite YouTuber. You must see the likes of Jonathan Pye and Dave Chappelle as just the latest iteration of Bill Maher. Remember, Maher kept saying he didn't like political correctness, but then quickly drank all the Kool-Aid on Russiagate and showed everyone that he was just another establishment stooge. Expect the same from these new people. Don't lionize them. Do not hero worship them. Remember, they are leftists, and leftists only care about control. Now get out.
It is. What I really wanted to ask you, though, is why are you lying to the public about the demographic replacement of Indigenous people?
Oh, sorry. I thought you wanted to ring up about Brexit.
I do. I'm happy about Brexit.
Yeah, well, that's what it says. It says here, Sarah wants to talk about the Brexit celebrations. Everybody should get to Parliament Square. I'll be taking my flag.
So, we were reluctant to talk about this subject the other day when that chap called up, and I wanted to know why you were deliberately missing...
Well, no, you...
Something interesting has happened this week, which is that the talk radio shock jock Mike Graham, a man whose entire shtick is to tell it like it is, revealed himself to be an establishment shill and coward when confronted with raw facts. Raw facts I have mentioned before on this channel, such as the fact that the non-white population of the UK was less than 20,000 in 1951, but by 2011 was over 8 million. It started when a woman rang up on his show and dared to mention this fact on the call, including the words "great replacement."
What do you mean?
It was a replacement policy by the UN and the EU to replace
who?
Population.
Replace who?
Us.
Well, who's replaced you?
Well, they're getting moved in to replace us. That's what the migration part was.
Are you feeling okay, Mary?
You've got good researchers. They should look on the UN site and they'll find the replacement policies and the EU site.
There is no replacement policy, Mary.
What?
If you were being replaced, you wouldn't be talking to me. The UN's got nothing to do with it. People are coming to this country to live because they don't like where they're currently living. We can argue about whether that's a good idea or not, but they're not coming here because the UN sent them.
Well, see when they all come marauding across Europe and nobody stopped them, and you can't see that because that's...
Well, you're talking about the Germans?
No. I'm not talking about the Germans. I'm talking about the whole... the law, all the governments, all taxpayers' money get to use it to pay for these...
I think you've been smoking that funny tobacco, Mary. I'm going to let you go. Look, the point is, we have an immigration problem in parts of this country. It is not because the United Nations has sent people here to replace the people who are the indigenous people of this country. Because guess what? There are no indigenous people of this country.
And was promptly shut down by Graham and told that the British people do not have an ancestral homeland. He employed the dishonest framing that we were all Viking once or something. Anyway, Laura Towler then made a video about this.
The thing about Mike Graham is that he presents himself as a straight-talking, no BS kind of guy. He's the edgy one on the radio who tells it exactly like it is.
And Graham, rather than honestly addressing the statistical facts and indeed the UN report, doubled down and took to calling Towler names and trying to big-time her by calling her a nobody. He then did a phone-in on the topic called... Are white Britons being replaced by immigrants? And as you can see, this has over 1,000 dislikes so far. It mainly consists of callers confronting him again with the raw facts of the matter and him being unprofessional, hanging up on people, and resorting to boorish name-calling. Then Morgoth's Review made a video.
So I thought I would just chime in on what's been going on with talk radio and talk radio host Mike Graham. So you've got this situation where a ton of people are ringing him up and they're asking about the... Oh, I can't say it on YouTube. I'll do it, Nick Lowry. Le Grand Laplacian.
And again, rather than to try to talk about the facts, Graham took to smearing and outright lying. At one point claiming
that Morgoth had begged to come on the show when nothing could be further from the truth. So why did Mike Graham, the shock jock who tells it like it is, react in this manner as opposed to calmly dismantling the claim? Is it just cognitive dissonance, or does he have an agenda? As it happened, my buddy, Poe the Person, who is pretty much a logic machine, looked at this question recently and calmly looked at the facts.
Kind of ignoring it for this whole time. I'm not really interested in that sort of thing. And it's, to me, it sounded like a conspiracy theory, and I still think that it is. But yesterday, the BBC posted a video on their website, and it was on the front page, although now it's become sort of more hidden amongst all of the BBC articles. It's a sort of infographic type video. The video is called "What Would the UK Be Like Without Immigration?"
Over the last two decades, immigration to the UK has run at rates unprecedented in our history, changing many aspects of our society and our economy. But what would Britain look like without immigration?
And it's just 3.5 minutes long, and it's just the description of the some statistics of what the UK is like now compared to the 1980s before mass immigration started. And at one point in the video, it says that 1 in 7 people in the UK was born abroad, and 1 in 3 babies born in the UK is born to parents who are one or both of them are immigrants, who are not born in the UK.
Without immigration, the UK's population would have been shrinking for quite some time. And when populations shrink, places hollow out. And perhaps more noticeable than fewer people would be that we'd be on average much older. More than a third of babies born in the UK have at least one parent from abroad.
And that reminded me of this great replacement theory that I've been hearing about online. And with the complicity or cooperation of replacist elites, the white French population, as well as the white European population at large, is being progressively replaced with non-European peoples, specifically Arab, Berber, sub-Saharan Muslim populations from Africa and the Middle East. So this is the theory that the white, what you could call native population of France in particular, but also Europe, white Europe, is being replaced by non-white immigrants. And it's called a white nationalist far-right conspiracy theory, despite the fact that it seems that every part of what is said there is in some ways correct. Whatever the intention is behind it, I can't find anything that denies the fact that the population of the UK is becoming more and more non-native, non-white European. In this video on the BBC, it says that this immigration is needed because the birth rate of the UK, of the native UK British, is falling, and the number of and the average age of the population is increasing. So we have a lot of old people and not enough young people to be in the working population in order to support the economy. So we need to bring in young people to supplement the decreasing birth rate, so we have a lot of young people in the future. And the video doesn't explicitly say that this has been done intentionally, but it's kind of implied that at least this is a happy accident. And when I was looking for that great replacement article on the white nationalist far-right conspiracy theory, I found this other article on Wikipedia called Replacement Migration, which is a very similar name, but it's a little bit different. In this article, it says, in demography, replacement migration is the theory of migration needed for a region to achieve a particular objective, demographic, economic, or social. Generally, studies using this concept have an objective to avoid the decline of the population and the decline of the working age population. That seems to pretty well sum up what is happening in the UK, but as soon as you introduce the idea of race into it, it becomes a white nationalist far-right conspiracy theory. I just wanted to make this video because I honestly don't know what to believe. the mainstream belief system would have me believe that the Great Replacement is a white supremacist, racist theory. And yet every part of that theory seems to be backed up by the mainstream belief system. The BBC are publishing articles about how the young population of this country is decreasing, and we need to import more young people who just happen to be of a different race.
So there it is. Someone with no agenda, using reason and evidence, cannot dismiss the idea as a conspiracy theory. Why can't Mike Graham do this? I think we got a problem, put it best.
Notable mention this week is the independent repussy of Mike Graham, the talk radio host who has resorted to the age-old lefty tactic when he can't defeat an argument or is forbidden by his masters from talking about it and instead starts name-calling. This is of course relating to the YouTuber Laura Towler tearing him a new arsehole on Twitter recently because he shut down a lady who called into his show making a valid point about UN migrant replacement policies. That does not take much researching to know she is right. Considering we heard Nicola Sturgeon, leader of the Scottish National Party, state exactly that in an interview I covered in my video yesterday about the SNP. As you will remember, she wanted mass EU immigration to replace the Scottish population and make it grow. Little Mickey has took to abusing Laura and her followers on Twitter.
Why is the Mike Graham containment policing the airwaves? Why is he controlling Britain's conversation? Why is he denying not only the facts, but also the views of the vast majority of his listeners? Cope harder, Mike. Now get out.
Piers Morgan walked off the set of Good Morning Britain yesterday amid a row over the B-list actress Meghan Markle. Now, it should be obvious to everyone that this moment was contrived by Morgan, not only to promote his anti-woke book, Wake Up, but also to clear the way for him to jump to Andrew Neil's new channel, GB News, which is set to launch later this month and is the biggest TV channel to launch in the UK since Sky News launched in 1989. This is so obvious that even the Sun have pointed it out. Now, while it is also obvious that GB News will be what we like to call controlled opposition, I actually see this as a very positive development. Let me count the ways. First, and most obviously, it will show through revealed preference the true size of the anti-left sentiment in the country among what we'd call normies. Second, it will draw the attention of the left, the eye of Sauron, if you will, away from the genuine right and onto this controlled opposition channel. Thus, GB News will act as a massive distraction for the left, especially when they fail to get it taken off air. And since this is controlled opposition, they will fail to get it taken off air. Third, it will clog up the YouTube algorithm, which will allow space for new under-the-radar dissident channels to flourish, as they will now be more difficult to find, except by those determined to find them. Which is good, because I believe it will constantly raise the quality of the individuals in our orbit, and this has already been happening, as intelligent new channels are cropping up all the time now. But the advent of GB News should accelerate this process further, increasing the sophistication of the discourse. Fourth, no matter the stated principles of Andrew Neil, there should be an echo chambering effect over time, as with Fox News over in America, which should create a more fertile right-wing economy in the UK, especially as their audience grows and starts to get more and more fed up of the left and the lack of genuine fight back against them. These are all benefits in my view, since GB News will not realistically be competing with any of us political commentators on YouTube, but rather it will be competing with the BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Sky and whatever other channels are out there whose default mode is bland political correctness, This competition from GB News could even force some of the other commercial channels like ITV or Sky to become a little less woke, but I doubt it. So why do I support Piers Morgan joining this channel? Well, the benefits are obvious. First, Piers Morgan has a large and dedicated fan base. If you doubt that, check out this tweet from C, who says, "I will always be by your side, mate. You are my idol. Piers Morgan, you will always be my biggest inspiration. I saw people going at my closest friend and did nothing, but if anything comes at you, they have to face me first. I will always be there for you, Piers." Now, this sort of thing, this sort of dedication from a fan base cannot be replaced unless ITV bring in someone with an equally large and dedicated following, like, for example, Morgan's nemesis, Jeremy Clarkson, which wouldn't be bad either, since he's not exactly Mr. PC or the left's number one friend, is he? Anyway, second, the left's focus on the channel, GB News, would be cemented, since now they supposedly hate him after Marklegate. I mean, those 40,000 complaints received by Ofcom were not organic. That was the organised left at play, and their inability to get Piers cancelled will infuriate them, as their inability to cancel Tucker Carlson in the US has infuriated them over there. Every minute of energy spent by the left on Piers Morgan is a minute of energy not spent on any of us, and this is good. The more the left can be pulled into wasting their time against controlled opposition, the better. And finally, Morgoth recently made an excellent video on how Piers Morgan, from his bully pulpit on Good Morning Britain, shapes the discourse in the UK. And I believe that he wouldn't be able to perform this role for the Cathedral on GB News because a brand new channel like this would not automatically be perceived in the same way as something like ITV's flagship breakfast show, at least not overnight. And this, again, is a positive because I think everyone would agree that having Piers Morgan as the de facto Prime Minister of the United Kingdom has not been a good thing over the past 12 months. Anyway, that's it from me. What are your thoughts? Let me know in the comments, and I'll see you there.
If you like Academic Agent's content on this channel, sign up for a course on the Academic Agency. He's now offering Foundations of Economics. Click the link in the show description and level up your econ knowledge.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.
So most of the time when I make these videos, I prepare a careful script. But today I'm recording this off the cuff because I'm so annoyed by the Tory boys that I continue to see making ridiculous points all over the place on Twitter, that I had to make this video outlining 10 key problems with their basic position on things. This has been triggered basically by the success of the England football team in the Euro 2020 or Euro 2021 tournament, and their position is basically that football is more important than politics and you have to get behind our boys. Now, this is an obviously stupid position, blind to the fact that football around Europe and around the world has been entirely co-opted by political agencies, by NGOs, by the various ranks of Globo Homo, as we call it, and they have weaponized football against the little people that they hate. And this is no more symbolized than by the fact that before every single game in the tournament, the England players have taken a knee in homage to BLM. And when I look around me at the sheer number of trucks, the sheer number of drooling idiots who are adjacent to the circles that I move in, who think that this has no significance, who think that it is above politics, it makes me think that they're so stupid that they deserve the total contempt of the ruling elites. And as one of my followers put it on Twitter, they deserve more than that. They deserve the active oppression of the elites. They deserve to have everything they love destroyed because they cheer on the very forces that are doing it. And they argue against the people who are pointing this out because it's more important to have a bit of fun, because ultimately the history books won't remember the political gestures. So fucking stupid. I watched the game last night and I couldn't really quite believe what I was seeing. The game started with the ITV football commentator saying that this team's, quote, struggle is for racial justice. So now we're seeing the language of Marxist critical race theory used by an ITV football commentator, where just two or three years ago this was totally fringe lunatic stuff. Now it's on mainstream television being watched by 20 million people, and these fucking morons can't see the symbolic importance of it. They can't see the significance of it. They think, oh well, no, actually football's above the culture wars. As I said, some of these people are so stupid, I wonder how they don't drown in their own drool. The whole episode has made me, it's really made clear to me the friend-enemy distinction. Anyone who doesn't see the symbolic tragedy of this England team winning the tournament and the longer-term damage it will really do isn't paying attention. And of course, they don't see the containment strategy that is being used upon them. In fact, I've seen various of their number saying things like, oh, we need to stop using terms like containment and controlled opposition. Fucking morons.
I'm 13 now, but I still remember many years ago when I was 11 and a half. My old dad gave me a Mighty Morphin Power Ranger. A white Power Ranger, and I love it.
So anyway, here are 10 reasons why Tory boys are useless, worse than useless. They are our enemies, okay? Listen to this. Number one, they worship normies and take any opportunity to default to being one. To the Tory boy, the normie is some sort of haloed saint who we need to make every attempt to make gestures to. As I've said before, a normie in 2021 is worse than useless to us. There's no waking them up at this point. You have to see them as little more than cattle who will always be led by some elite or other. So either let somebody else control them or make efforts to control them yourself. Worshipping them is the absolute worst thing that you can do. Secondly, they cheer on their own defeats with cope, post hoc rationalisations. This whole episode with the football has shown exactly that. Obviously, it is a catastrophic defeat in the culture wars for this England team, this kneeling, BLM-loving, Marxist-approved England team to be winning this tournament or even getting to the final. It's obviously bad. You know, Gareth Southgate was described as being deep woke in the Financial Times. But seeing these people, you know, oh, why can't you let me have a good time? I'm just, simple as. I love my football, simple as. Fucking morons. Third, they still have faith in the system. After everything that's happened, after everything that we saw in 2020, after everything that we've seen with Boris Johnson's government, they still, in their heart of hearts, have faith in the institutions of this country. I don't know how to wake these people up. In fact, let's not bother. Let's just write them off as just being another stripe of normie at this point. Fourth, they accept the moral framework of their enemies, and they continually do this, despite the fact that they will be called all of the isms and all of the names under the sun. You still see them repeatedly accepting the moral framework of their enemies. Whether it comes to, you know, optics or, you know, being accused of being a racist or a sexist or whatever, you see them leaning into that moral framework still. And even now. Five, they crave social acceptance and respectability from their enemies. Again, all of these things that we've been outlining are a subset, I guess, of this idea that they want to be respectable in polite society. And if polite society happens to be, you know, social justice orientated, leftist, woke to the core, so be it. They have to try to get on the right side of that, because they're so weak and they have such a lack of conviction in their ideas that ultimately they kowtow to the very people that hate them. Number six, they cement the victories of yesterday's leftists. That is, you continually see Tory boys put yesterday's battles beyond the pale. Even if yesterday's battles were 5 years ago or 10 years ago, now it's beyond the pale to go back there. Those are, you know, the steps made towards progress. And, you know, it's 2021 now, bro. You can't go back there. You see that all the time as well. It's unrealistic. It's unrealistic to expect us to go backwards. Number seven, they still buy unquestioningly into the boomer truth regime, especially narratives around World War II. Now, I've talked about this at length elsewhere, but obviously this message, many of the people watching this understand it implicitly and explicitly. But these people, they just continue to ape the same sort of bollocks that Boris Johnson does around Winston Churchill, around, you know, the 1960s, you name it. They play into the boomer truth regime, which essentially is a moral framework in which the ultimate good is individual self-expression and the ultimate bad are the mid-century Germans. And you'll see these people continually doing this, whether they are aware of it or not, on social media. Number eight, they resist and dismiss the introduction of concepts reclaimed from ancient wisdom as mere jargon and therefore never learn. As I said, I've seen various of these people writing off concepts like the cathedral, writing off concepts like controlled opposition, writing off concepts like containment, all of these, writing off a concept like the boomer truth regime. They just dismiss all of these things as if they're just jargon. It's just like there's no actual thoughts behind these things. It's just a bunch of silly people on the internet using jargon, and therefore they never learn. They never actually learn the lessons that the rest of us learn. That they stay in their 2015 bubble with, you know, wince-inducing talking points, trapped forever in that moment. Number nine, they get caught up in irrelevant short-term battles and never see the woods for the trees. Again, you'll see this all the time. Football is just the latest in a long line of examples of these people continually doing this. And honestly, they deserve to lose. They deserve to lose every short-term battle, and they deserve to lose the long-term battle as well, because they just don't see the bigger picture. And number 10, at the end of the day, they are a bigger enemy than outright leftists, because they hold back our side, they hold back effective opposition to the left, and let's face it, leftists at least are somewhat honest about their intentions most of the time, whereas these people, who are enemies who ostensibly present themselves as friends, are worse because they're dissembling, they're dishonest. they present themselves as being right-wing, but they're not right-wing in any sense because of the previous 9 points that I've given you. All right, I had to get that off my chest because, you know, it's been pissing me off. All right, get out of here.
Where's your maths homework, Tory boy?
It's not a question of where it is. Oh, no. It's a question of what was it? And was it of a sufficiently high standard to meet the requirements of the national curriculum?
I said, where's your homework?
And I am saying to you, are you meeting your requirements? The requirements set out quite clearly.
Answer the question. Where's your homework?
You answer my question.
Tory boy, shut up and give me your homework.
I am denied the right to free speech.
All right, get out.
And sent into exile. But you can't send me to a Labour camp because we don't live in your Soviet socialist new Labour utopia. We live in Britain. A free Britain. A conservative Britain.
By Foundations of Writing on the Academic Agency. To write clearly will help you to think clearly. The ability to communicate ideas in lucid prose is foundational to success in many areas, and it is a basic requirement in every walk of life. You will learn the parts of speech and come to understand the core functions of the English language, sentence construction and syntax, punctuation, style, and common mistakes. Once you see how mistakes are made, you will not unsee them. You will know for the rest of your life. Foundations of Writing. Buy it now.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.
Buy Foundations of Writing on the Academic Agency. To write clearly will help you to think clearly. The ability to communicate ideas in lucid prose is foundational to success in many areas, and it is a basic requirement in every walk of life. You will learn the parts of speech and come to understand the core functions of the English language, sentence construction and syntax, punctuation, style, and common mistakes. Once you see how mistakes are made, you will not unsee them. You will know for the rest of your life. Foundations of Writing. Buy it now.
I had to make this video today, just another off-the-cuff one, folks, because this article in The Guardian really does take the biscuit for chutzpah and gall and sheer. The Fabian Society says recent fights don't reflect genuine divisions and risk fracturing British discourse. Politicians and media told to stop fabricating culture war. So the Fabian Society, the people who, if you don't know, are largely responsible for introducing the laws, for infiltrating society, the slow march through the institutions, all of the subversion that we've seen, all of the leftward drift of society, the undermining of Christianity, the general creep, the boil the frog slowly strategy that everybody talks about. The Fabian Society in Britain are responsible for the original Blairites, you could say. And today they had this article basically saying that the culture wars are made up. Let's read this because it really needs to be read to be believed. Much of the focus on the so-called culture war issues in the UK is based on confected controversies, a think tank analysis has suggested, with the debate artificially inflamed by politicians and commentators and then amplified by social media. While some countries wage battles over more genuine societal divides, the UK's culture wars simply pitted deprived communities against each other and tended to caricature movements for equality, the Fabian Society said. The report from the left-wing organization charted the trajectory of a series of recent controversies attributed to culture wars, such as debate over whether Rule Britannia should be played on the final night of the proms, and supposed efforts to cancel the film Grease,
concluding that these do not reflect genuine divisions and are stoked by politicians and the media. All right. It warned politicians from both the left and the right to avoid taking part in such antics, lest political discourse in the UK become as fractured as that in the US. In other words, this is, if you remember that analysis I did of the Tony Blair talk, it's still available. I've made it free because I think it's an important thing for people to watch and to understand. Tony Blair said, if you get into a culture war with the right, you will lose that war. So what you need to do is to hide, he's telling the left wing to hide their power levels, to be less in your face, and to go back to Fresh Prince, as I call it. Because you can't boil the frog slowly if everybody is up in arms in outrage cycles all the time. You can't boil the frog slowly if the right are ready for a fight, basically. So the Fabian Society have always been about moving hidden and unseen. They hate to be exposed. And this is why I'm making this video today, to alert everybody to the fact that the dark masterminds, if you want, behind left-wing strategy in this country are trying to persuade everybody to go back to Fresh Prince, to go back to the Blairite strategy where they're boiling the frog slowly. And I don't think it's any coincidence, by the way, that this appeared today, the day after the football, the football debacle that we saw yesterday, which, surprise, surprise, has been all about race. It's been all about, the narrative has shifted now because the three players who missed the penalties last night were black. It's shifted to a narrative about online abuse of those players. But of course, as Pat Condell pointed out on Twitter earlier on, if you make the whole thing about race and if you bang people on the head with it, there's going to be a backlash and it's going to lead to more racism, not less. So really, they made a rod for their own back, especially if those players are gonna miss as they did. And personally, I'll just say I feel really sorry for that 19-year-old because he's just 19. He shouldn't have been put in that position. Southgate should have picked his leaders to take them, not kids. But anyway, regardless of that, you can see how culture war issues can kind of backfire occasionally for the left. And now this narrative that they're running with today is much weaker than the narrative had they won. Incidentally, I don't know where those Tory boys are who said that football was above politics today, because obviously it isn't. But you can see here the Fabian Society trying to put the genie back in the bottle. It's not going to work, Fabian Society. And if you're watching this, don't allow this to happen. You have to keep on. Lenin says, when you find mush, plunge the bayonet. This, if you can imagine, is the Fabian Society on their hands and knees begging, like Ric Flair in a, begging off, saying, look, we don't want this fight. We don't want this fight. All we want is the power to boil the frog slowly, stop these culture war things because we're going to lose. So anyway, let's carry on. The public deserves better than fabricated fights. Fabricated fights. These are the people behind things like the Communication Bill, the Communications Act from 2003. These would be the people who would have fully supported the Equality Act of 2010. These would have been the people who've been pushing for all of the things that people have culture wars over. These are the people behind it. So for them to call these fights fabricated is a bit rich. Anyway, the public deserve better than fabricated fights, said Kirsty McNeil, a charity executive and former Labour advisor who co-authored the analysis. The temptations for all political parties are clear, riling up a base and pointing it at an imagined enemy. An imagined enemy? Are there imagined enemies now? They're imagined enemies. When people get hounded and fired from their jobs, it's an imagined enemy, is it? It's all right for you to say that it's an imagined enemy, but for the people on the right who play costs for their positions, for the people on the right who believe in the things that they're talking about. It's not an imagined enemy, Kirsty. It's a real enemy. Riling up a base and pointing at an imagined enemy is much easier than doing the hard yards involved in meeting the Prime Minister's ambition to level up. Interesting that the Fabian Society are on the same side as Boris Johnson, by the way. Equally, ignoring rivals' attempts to sow division won't help Keir Starmer assemble a broad and diverse coalition to back his vision of a fairer country. Oh, it's only Keir Starmer's rivals' attempts to sow division, is it, Kirsty? It's only the right who attempt to sow division. It's not all of the rhetoric around BLM, taking a knee, all of the crap that we're pumped full of daily on the BBC. It's not all of the left-wing narratives that are sowing division. It's the reaction from the right that's sowing division. Got it. Tell the girls from Rotherham, who Keir Starmer failed to prosecute during his time when he was in charge of that, that these are just imagined, that these divisions are imagined. Roger Harding, the author who heads the Reclaim Youth Charity, said, "Culture war peddlers often use contrived stories to pit working class communities against one another." Oh, they're contrived. Rotherham was contrived, was it? The Ariana Grande attack was contrived, was it? The constant bombardment that we see on the BBC as regards BLM, etc., is contrived, is it? They pit working class communities against one another and caricature movements for racial and LGBT equality. I imagined Pride Month, did I? I imagined the fact that every single brand shoved the rainbow flag down my throat. It's just made up. Boris Johnson's government has been accused of seeking to capitalize on the culture war issues to stir up its base, with attacks on so-called woke culture and a campaign to prevent the institutions such as museums and galleries from critically re-examining the UK's past. All right, so it's Boris Johnson's fault that museums and galleries and institutions that are meant to protect our heritage are actually destroying that heritage. It's the right's fault. Look at this disgusting, twisted logic from the Fabian Society here. Honestly, such an evil organization. Among the most vehement criticism came in June when Samuel Kasumu, Johnson's former advisor on race, said he feared such provocations could beget another outrage like the murders of Stephen Lawrence or Joe Cox. And this is somebody who used to work for Johnson, interestingly. The Fabian Society warned politicians on the left to avoid the temptation to engage in such culture war battles because they're going to lose. Just like Blair said, don't fight the right on culture, you'll lose on it. You know, arguing that they tend to simply divide opinion over the prospects of positive change. So here they are trying to wake up, trying to say, listen, put all this back in the bottle, just do it quietly. Let the plebs just watch the football in peace. Stop putting it in their faces. We need to go back to boiling the frog slowly. We need to go back to Fresh Prince. It's too late now, Fabian Society. And if you're watching this, do not relent. Carry on relentlessly. Culture warrior forever. Do not let them put the genie back in the bottle. Another report on the issue, published last week by the right-wing Center for Policy Studies, based on polling among the public, argued that while genuine differences of opinion on values exist between Conservative and Labour supporters, the bulk of voters are more exercised by matters such as paying the bills. All right, get back to economics. It's a safer ground. Get back to economics so that people stop thinking about all of these other issues that you've been banging them over the head with for the past 5 years. The study compiled by the veteran US pollster and communications expert Frank Luntz uncovered what he called alarming findings of discontent about UK politicians. asked to rank 18 descriptions of how British political leaders made them feel, split between positive and negative emotions, the top 8 choices were disappointed, ignored, irrelevant, fed up, betrayed, forgotten, left behind, and angry. Okay, so how about addressing some of those rather than saying, oh, let's change tactics and stop talking about the culture wars? How about fucking addressing some of the concerns that people have got rather than trying to cover it up and pull the rope, put it all under the carpet? Andrew Harrop, General Secretary of the Fabian Society, said, those on the left must focus their energy not on winning culture wars, but on calling them out. Oh, right. You start a culture war, then you think, oh, shit, we're not going to win this. We're getting hammered out there. Now we just have to call it out. Fucking just honestly, the level of Machiavellian evil of these people. So this is what I'm doing here. I am calling them out, and I'm showing their tactics. I mean, they write them. They published it in The Guardian. You have to, whenever anybody tries to do this, link them back to this article and point out what the Fabian Society have done to British culture. Pelt them with copies of The Abolition of Britain by Peter Hitchens, who is basically the gold standard on pointing out what the Fabian Society have done to this country. He said, it will not be easy to end the culture wars, which have become a valuable tool for cynics on the right. Cynics on the right. Oh, yeah, it's just cynical. It's just cynical. They're not reacting to anything real. These fake controversies create divisions between people with shared economic needs, and they distract the public from low tax, low regulation, libertarian worldview that few people in Britain support. So there we go. They're basically saying that the Tories just use culture wars to distract from the fact they're doing libertarian economics. Nobody really cares about these culture war issues. Yeah. All right. I just thought I had to share that with you just because of the sheer level of cynical Machiavellian evil that the Fabian Society. And I just can't believe that the cheek and the gall of putting this out when they caused all of this. They changed those laws. They pushed for them. They agitated for every single thing that people are now outraged about during the so-called culture wars. All right, I'll leave it there.
Now available at the Academic Agency. Sharpen your analytical mind and your argumentation skills with Foundations of Logic. The course draws on the ancient wisdom of traditional logic that students learned for over 2,000 years, from the time of Aristotle through to the medieval schoolmen, right down to the 20th century. Sign up now for a free preview lecture.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.
Buy Foundations of Writing on the Academic Agency. To write clearly will help you to think clearly. The ability to communicate ideas in lucid prose is foundational to success in many areas, and it is a basic requirement in every walk of life. You will learn the parts of speech and come to understand the core functions of the English language, sentence construction and syntax, punctuation, style, and common mistakes. Once you see how mistakes are made, you will not unsee them. You will know for the rest of your life. Foundations of Writing. Buy it now.
The liberal democracies in which we live in the West, as we know, tend to swim leftwards, regardless of what the masses happen to believe. Elite opinion is on a permanent left-wing trajectory towards ever greater progressivism and globalism. However, right-wing sentiments in the masses, so-called populism, serve as a danger to the liberal democratic system. There are several inbuilt mechanisms to contain this. I would like to consider two in this video. First, the mindset of the Tory boy, the first layer of right-wing containment, and second, the mindset of counter-jihad, which is the system's last line of defence. The mask and the face of containment, you could say, but actually both variants of exactly the same thing.
To consider the Tory boy first, let us consider an exchange I had today on Twitter with the Tory boys, six men who live on a diet of almost pure cope. I would ask you to look past the individuals involved and rather to see the worldview behind their thinking. Let us tease out what they are appealing to in making the arguments that they have made. It started when I pointed out to Easter Gammon worshipper, the head of the Tory boys, who spends a lot of his time on Twitter championing the royal family, and especially Prince William and Kate Middleton, that his hero has been telling Afghan refugees that they couldn't be more welcome here. And let's have a look at his initial reply. He says, 1. Prince William is not in control of our immigration system. 2. These are not illegals. 3. Now they are here, the only option is to be nice and pleasant. 4. What do you expect him to say? Start ranting at them like Mark Collette or Tommy Robinson? Truly, there is nothing the Tory boy won't do not to bend over backwards to excuse the establishment. Of course, the only alternative to fawning over the acceptance of foreigners in his mind is, quote, Tommy Robinson or Mark Collette. And a bit more on that later. This is your mind on mainstream values. But notice that implicit in his worldview here is a note of defeat. Ideally, we wouldn't be taking in lots of refugees, but they are here, so we might as well accept it. In any case, what's a man like Prince William supposed to do apart from to grin and bear it and welcome them with open arms? He continues, he is the future king, not a right-wing activist or politician. These Afghans will eventually be his subjects, so of course he will be welcoming. This is the decent thing for a future king to do, regardless whether we think they should be here in the first place or not. So now it's beyond just defeatism and pragmatism. It's actually a virtue that Prince William is doing this, and that's a good thing, as a liberal centrist might say. So now we have to entertain the fiction that these Afghanis are going to become lovers of the monarchy. Maybe they'll be like the best of British, the Siddiqui family from off of Gogglebox or another of Eastern Gammon worshippers' heroes, based Preeti Patel. 3 lions on a shirt, jewels remain still gleaming. I mean, God, it makes you so proud, doesn't it? That's what it's all about, eh? Our boys out there giving it their all. Our 3 lions, they're the real winners. And maybe one day also Ali or Muhammad will be there singing along on the terraces because, you know, Bobby Moore means so much to him. And when Lineker scored, Bobby belting the ball and Nobby dancing. It's like the Tory boy dream is to turn these fine fellows you see on the screen here into an Afghan version of North FC. You know, Abdal Al-Karim is going to love it when he finally gets to go to Greg's and maybe have a cheese pasty. Maybe he'll get himself a commemorative plate of King William from the back of the Radio Times. Or he too can glory in what it means to be British, doing the Mobot and draping himself in the Union Jack. Maybe he too can get himself some good old-fashioned British values by eating a tin of shortbread while he's at it. Naturally, the sheer absurdity of this worldview cannot be defended on its own merits, and thus the Tory boys needed to change tack. So what could they appeal to instead of defending their biscuit tin traditionalist nonsense? Easter Gammon worshipper naturally called in the Rocksteady and Bebop of Tory Twitter, the Dumb and Dumber, the Tweedledee and Tweedledum, Vanishing Point and Lord Urquhart. They came crashing in to save their master. And naturally, they thought they could zero in on the fact that I'm half Iranian as a kind of gotcha. Vanishing Point said, immigrant angry about immigrants and the erosion of indigenous culture. Urquhart chimed in, AA is more Iranian in his worldview than he is British, 100%. Vanishing Point went even further. Things Iranians hate. Churchill for invading Iran in 1941. Communists for invading Iran in 1941. Attlee for the Abadan crisis of 1951. Anything Israeli, 1945 onwards. Things Iranians like. Making transsexuals. And the ball was rolling now. You could see Urquhart was gaining confidence. He was in his element here. And so he came back again. He says, your ideology, he's talking to me, your ideology is foreign and needs to be stepped over. You have more in common with mid-century Germany than anything that's ever existed in Britain. Finally, a chance for these clowns to engage in some allowable racism, a nice big dollop of allowable racism that the Tory boys can lap up. Iran, I mean, that's got to be an acceptable target, right? Time to hammer AA for his foreign blood and for his foreign ways of thinking, his foreign ideas and so on. And yet, let us recall what all of this was in defense of again. All right, remember Prince William welcoming Afghan refugees? Now, you know, if someone who was born and brought up in Wales, who grew up in the cultural quagmire of the 1980s and 1990s, graduating from He-Man and Thundercats to Queer as Folk and Eurotrash, is actually too foreign to listen to, then what hope do we have of ever integrating our newest British brothers here? And thus the Tory boys unwittingly expose the key flaw in their mindset. When push comes to shove, when you get beyond the naive appeals to bulldog nationalism and biscuit tin traditionalism, under the surface lurks an appeal to something else, and something which can only manifest itself as a kind of low IQ nativism, a bankrupt racism that imagines that a drop of Iranian blood transforms you into a lunatic or fanatic. And yet, the irony is that if you ever point out to these people one group who does persistently act in their own interests, one group that does persistently demonstrate overwhelming in-group preference, well, that makes you the second coming of Mustache Man. I mean, after all, that just isn't British, is it? It goes against Judeo-Christian values. So let's recount. The Tory boy feels safe defending Prince William welcoming refugees. He feels safe demonising Iranians. But he doesn't feel safe if anybody points out who owns the media. There is a deeper facet of their thinking revealed in this, however, which is, at its heart, the fact that they are scared of the Afghan refugee. They are scared of the other, who they do not really wish to welcome when all is said and done. Yet, paradoxically, they are forced to accept and defend this welcoming. The cowardice of the Tory boy is total, and thus he is forever in such a double bind. But note that the mask of the Tory boy is defending Prince William's welcoming of Afghan refugees, but the face of the Tory boy, this is when they go on the offensive, is revealed against the vile Iranian outsider. And thus we come to the last line of defense in the system. When Tory containment can no longer work, the regime has one last trick up its sleeve. And this is what we call counter-jihad, what you might call the Katie Hopkins grift. Now, before we continue, it's worth pointing out that even though counter-jihad is nominally to the right of the Tory boy and will likely be disavowed by the Tory boy, as we saw Easter Gammon worshipper disavowing Tommy Robinson earlier on, in actuality, as revealed by the attack on Iranians per se, in the final analysis, they actually share the assumptions of counter-jihad. They are just more genteel about it. When the system wants to, such as under George W. Bush and Tony Blair, it can even lean into this in a more mainstream way. It spent about a decade programming young men to believe that Islam was the enemy across media and in video games. Now, I have identified 8 general features of counter-jihad that I'd like you to become aware of and to look out for. Number one is violent and ugly rhetoric that does often cross the line into very obvious bigotry and gives the left justifiable talking points, you know, justifiable outrage that they can then fill up their own column inches with. This is designed to get the base, the right-wing base, excited because the rhetoric has been turned up to 11 and this will upset the regime. And this in turn establishes their credentials, the counter-jihadists' credentials, as being, quote, based and right-wing. Almost the more over the top they can be, the better, since it serves as a point for the left wing to demonize and paint the right as low IQ grugs. And it serves as a point for said low IQ grugs to provide evidence that they are not stooges of the mainstream. Now, the second feature of counter-jihad is, of course, overwhelming focus on Islam as the source of the problem. This is a low-key acceptable target, as I've already discussed, because while the charge of Islamophobia will come from the left, this has much less purchase in the general populace as compared with, say, anti-Semitism. Vanishing Point, for example, who was so happy to generalize about the 84 million or so Iranians around the world, would nearly have a stroke if you dared do the same thing about the 15 or so million Jewish people in the world. Or just if you happen to point out that this group happened to over-index in certain areas. The regime tells him that it's okay to demonize Iranians, but his mind simply will not allow himself to look at that other group because that would just be beyond the pale. That makes you literally Hitler. Third, a general flanking of Islam from the left by pointing out its issues with women's rights, with gay rights, LGBT, etc., etc. Now, this is an extremely common tactic employed by virtually everyone from the more daring Tory MP to Paul Joseph Watson. What it tells you is that their core values are liberal and not reactionary. But beyond that, it tells you that they have not thought seriously about the core reasons for the malaise of the West. Fourth, there is the mysterious and undying love for Israel. Now, I'm not sure if I need to say anything more than this. It is simply a persistent feature of groups centered around counter-jihad for reasons you will have to investigate for yourselves. Fifth, there is the studious funneling of the issue into being one of cultural heritage alone, generally downplaying racial elements. It's important for counter-jihad to establish the issue is with Islam per se as an ideology, as an idea. There is nothing racial motivating what has been going on in the West beyond that. I'd suggest that this narrative is more difficult to maintain in 2021 than it was in 2015, but I also find it interesting that we are now seeing a resurgence of counter-jihad in both Britain on GB News and in France with the upcoming election. It actually tells me that the system is fighting a rearguard action against what it perceives to be more dangerous sentiments bubbling up in the population. Number six, appeal to either bulldog nationalism or biscuit tin traditionalism. These two elements of control, on the one hand, appeal to World War II myths, and on the other hand, branded safe versions of what it means to be, quote, British or French or American or whatever else on the other. And these
Myths are very powerful. We saw Lord Urquhart utilize it earlier when he suggested that my ideas are, quote, not British and are somehow, quote, German. But what does he mean when he says this? At root, all he's really talking about is basic pattern recognition. The idea that British people have always been unable to do this is nonsensical. The Tory boys and counter-jihadists alike worship the figure of Sir Winston Churchill, the patron saint of bulldog nationalism. Now, one of Churchill's favourite historians was a chap called Sir Arthur Bryant, and I'm sure that the Tory boys would be quick to denounce the contents of Unfinished Victory, written in 1940. They'd call it un-British if they ever took note of what this book actually contains. Number 7. Generally, the counter-jihad will not talk about deeper causes of the issue. They will not talk about spiritual elements. A large aspect of counter-jihad is a focus on the ephemera of current events and the channeling of anger towards specific parties and or individuals. Let's say the Labour Party in the UK, for example, or somebody like Ash Sarkar. What you do not typically see them talking about is what might have led us to this place culturally and spiritually. The analysis, at most, might acknowledge the role of establishment elites, for example, in stitching up somebody like Enoch Powell at the height of his popularity, but it will give no hint as to why this happened. The best you will get is something like Douglas Murray writing generally about how there's a feeling that Europe is tired, but he will seldom do more than simply gesture towards the problem. And number 8, it will garner lots of mainstream media attention, whether positive or negative. Finally, the figures of counter-jihad will be controversial. They'll soak up column inches. They'll become established as household names, whether to be vilified by the media on the left or else as a talking point for Johnny Pleb to talk about how they've been misunderstood and are speaking the truth. What is crucial to grasp, however, is that these figures are accepted into the wider political discourse of the nation as it is represented by mainstream media. There are no right-wing positions beyond counter-jihad, according to the discourse. The options are becoming a screamy, loony lefty like Owen Jones, becoming a more sensible Blairite on the centre-left, becoming a more sensible Tory boy on the centre-right, or becoming a screaming bigot like Katie Hopkins. That's your political compass. And anyone with half a brain cell should be able to see that this is a trap. Let's say a sandwich trap that has been laid. This is a media fiction. Of course, that political compass doesn't even come close to exhausting the range of possible positions that somebody could take in 2021, and it comes nowhere near close to establishing the position of any of us on the so-called dissident right. All right, that'll do. Let me know what you think in the show notes, and I'll see you again.
I'm delighted to be launching the second part of the Trivium, Foundations of Logic. This will help anyone who is regularly in the habit of making arguments, whether at work, for study, for example in essays, or just in the cut and thrust of everyday life. We are surrounded by arguments. We are surrounded by people making truth claims about the world. And logic gives you the tools to analyze and assess those claims while also ensuring that your own arguments are sharp and on point. And I know a lot of you want that. Foundations of Logic is a very traditional course, drawing chiefly from the tradition of Aristotle, which was inherited and built upon by the medieval scholastic logicians and carried forward
into the 19th century and the 20th centuries by many a schoolmaster and university don. Unfortunately, this system of logic that had endured for over 2,000 years largely fell into disuse over the course of the past 100 years, which is a great shame because despite its seemingly arcane and obscure looking diagrams and mnemonic formulations, it has tremendous practical use and it would be of advantage for anyone to learn. Of all of the courses that I have produced, this one is particularly exciting for me because it gets underneath the very order of thought itself. The tools of logic are a BS shredder. They will detect any flaw in an argument's terms, for example, unclear definitions. They will zero in on any false assumptions made in the premises of an argument, and they will expose errors in the chain of reasoning itself. This course should teach you how to do all of that. Furthermore, Foundations of Logic includes discussion of over 60 fallacies, both formal and informal, which, while often misused by those who have merely skimmed Wikipedia articles and in internet debates of all kinds, in the hands of someone who is trained in the fundamentals of logic, they will help you locate with pinpoint precision any errors or dirty tricks an interlocutor is trying to pull. If anyone still bothers to listen to politicians or watch mainstream news, you might struggle to go even 60 seconds without witnessing a fallacy of some kind. Everyone will benefit from increasing their knowledge of logic and practicing logic on the arguments of others and on their own arguments. Foundations of Logic is available now for £150. Don't waste your time watching Netflix during lockdown. Buy Foundations of Logic instead and give your brain a workout. Hope you enjoy the course. Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.
We live in a soft managerial regime. It is expert at creating new lines of cleavage and division to put its enemies into disarray and cement its grip on power. If a set of people break from the regime on one issue, it can contain them and win them back with a new narrative. Let's take two test cases. Back in 2016, there arose a line of cleavage over the issue of political correctness and what is now typically called woke. One site that rose in that era was Quillette. I even wrote a few pieces for this site myself, once upon a time. However, I sensed even back then that the publication would drift and succumb quickly to Robert Conquest's second law. It took the COVID-19 pandemic, a new narrative and a new set of dividing lines to pull Quillette back in line with pretty much every establishment narrative. They kept their old line on woke issues, but for its founder, Claire Lehman, the restrictions around the pandemic and the vaccines, both of which she supported in lockstep with the Australian government, became a new dividing line, losing her friends, such as Brett Weinstein, and making her new enemies, such as Tim Pool. Increasingly isolated, Lehman, for some reason, took to sharing scantily clad pictures of herself, showing off her tall and toned body, and, even by her own admission, her ass. Then, perhaps tired of being ratioed by Weinstein, Poole and others over COVID, she stopped posting on Twitter altogether just last month. Quillette, however, limps on, even though engagement seems way down from its 2018 heyday. And, predictably, now there is a new dividing line, Russia versus Ukraine. They have once again found themselves lockstep on the side of the establishment, publishing straightforward pro-Ukrainian
nationalist propaganda and paper-thin attacks on the, quote, medieval Vladimir Putin. And thus, one node of possible resistance to the regime, a publication that, back when I wrote for it, in 2018, had a bit of punk edge about it, now scarcely has anything to recommend it above any other mainstream media outlet. It's basically like a more pretentious Daily Telegraph, only probably more left-leaning. Now let's check in on GB News, launched just last year, to, quote, take on woke warriors. Although hopes were never high for this containment mechanism, they managed to ride populist anti-lockdown sentiment through the figure of Neil Oliver, who rose as a mouthpiece against COVID tyranny. But now there's been a narrative shift. And, well, let's have a little look to see how things are going.
Let me bring in my superstar panel now. The Daily Mail star columnist and broadcaster Amanda Platel.
Oh, Dad, can I take this coat off?
Yeah, what are you doing?
I got here so late, they just bundled me in. I don't even know if I'm mic'd up.
I'm very worried to see what I'm about to see. Oh.
Thank God.
It's your Zelensky. Your Zelensky outfit.
I think we should all be showing solidarity.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it. Well, we know where Amanda stands. We've got Adam Brooks here too. Of course, he is the social media campaigner.
He's very khaki too.
And very Zelensky-like. And political editor of the Sunday Mirror, Nigel Nelson too. So, Amanda, we know where you stand on this. And you're a fan.
That's not the first time a man's face has been between them.
Oh, goodness gracious me.
I beg your pardon.
And just like that, GB News and the woke warriors now walk in lockstep on an issue, united as one behind the establishment. I had a little check to see what the fearless Neil Oliver has been saying about Ukraine, by the way, and aside from a couple of tweets where he said that it wouldn't have happened under Donald Trump, he basically has nothing to say whatsoever and has been very quiet indeed. And this is why I continue to maintain that single issues will always lead to containment in this way. The only correct stance for a dissident is clear them out.
Clear them out. Clear out. Clear them out. You've got to clear them out. You've got to clear them out as well. There needs to be a new start.
Until you recognise that the fundamental problem isn't woke or pandemic restrictions or any other issue, but the elites themselves, the permanent ruling class, and recognise that it is they who are your number one enemies above all other enemies. Until you recognise that, you will always be game to be co-opted back into the system. Now get out. Foundations of Politics, only £350. Buy it now. See the world as it is and not how it ought to be. History is the graveyard of aristocracy. Who says organization says oligarchy? Who decides? Who interprets? The extremes of individualism and socialism meet. That was their predestined course. Foundations of Politics. Only £350. Buy it now.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe, and if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.